Coming up on this week's Wells Tech Podcast, we talk to author Jesse Rice, the author of The Church of Facebook. Really excited to have him on the show and talk through his book, which we'll also be reviewing, Chapter 2, where we talk about the home-like qualities of Facebook, all coming up next on the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wells Tech Podcast, episode 209 for Wednesday, November 9th, 2011. My name is Martin Spriggs, and joining me, as usual, is Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Busy week at the Synod Administration Building for you?
The Synodical Council met over the weekend, and all kinds of news coming out of there. So it's never a dull moment here.
There you go. And, never a dull moment.
I'm heading up to New Ulm next weekend, and I'm hoping you're not going to greet me with any snow up there.
Oh, no. We've got sunshine waiting for you, and I guess the 450 students who are coming to the National Choral Fest at Martin Luther College. Mm-hmm. So looking forward to that.
When do your students arrive? Thursday?
Yeah, Thursday night. We're getting a group here in Sleepy Eye to farm out to different families from Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School. Looking forward to that. I think we'll end up with about five high school boys joining our three boys here in the Draper household.
Party.
Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So I assume NVL sings in that as well, right?
They do. Yep, nice. They have a show choir too. So mm-hmm.
Busy weekend up there, so I'm looking forward to it. I think we're going to visit the Mall of America on Saturday. It's been a while since we've been up there.
Oh, that's always an adventure.
Saturday's a downer.
Now they have a Microsoft store right across from the Apple store, so you can.
Is that right?
Both.
I've never been in a Microsoft store.
They're directly across from one another.
Ah, okay.
It's a lot of
fun. Pictures. Yep. So we got a field trip coming up on Saturday, but looking forward to seeing you and all the folks up there and listening to some great music. Those guys do an awesome job.
I'm sure it will be well worth our time, and we'll have information later in the show if you want to tune in and watch the live broadcast.
Absolutely. So we are continuing our discussion this week on the book, The Church of Facebook by Jesse Rice, and I'm particularly excited about this episode, Sally, because we have none other than the author of the book joining us on the show and talking about why he wrote the book and all kinds of insights about Facebook, which is, it's always great to hear straight from the author rather than just, you know, reading, you know, kind of a structured chapter-by-chapter approach, get to ask some maybe more in-depth questions, and it was really good to have him on the show.
Yeah, what a treat for us. Through the wonders of Twitter, we were able to connect with him, and we really appreciate that Jesse joined us and just kind of drove home the points in his book a lot more for me, and especially as we look at Chapter 2 of the book this week, which is titled Revolution. Mm-hmm. We started out our discussion with Jesse's illustration about the bridge, the Millennium Bridge in London that was built, and when the pedestrians first walked across the bridge, it began to shake, and they kind of spontaneously begin to skate across the bridge almost mm-hmm. with an interesting gait that developed in order to synchronize their movements with the bridge's shaking. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the illustration that Jesse carries throughout the book, that change happens. And when it does, we react sometimes in unpredictable ways,
right.
And then a new order kind of develops out of that. Mm-hmm. And so taking that illustration and applying it to the change that's happened in all our lives because of Facebook and other social media that's become a part of our lives in the last few years. Yep. And in this particular chapter, looking at why Facebook how it developed and why it is a place that so many people want to be. Mm-hmm. Why this change happened, why all the buzz around Facebook.
Right. So as technology comes into our life, and this is, again, a theme throughout the book, things do change as a result of technology. So it's not just the message that is conveyed over the technology, but technology itself suggests ways in which we maybe need to adapt and change our lives. In the first part of the chapter leading up to this whole Facebook concept, I mean, he doesn't even mention Facebook in the first part of this particular chapter again, because he's talking about an example of, let's say, something as simple, at least in our minds, as air conditioning, and all the ramifications that came from the introduction of air conditioning into the United States, you know, where people live, how they work, how they interact with each other, what it enabled them to do, and, you know, the whole concept of change brought on by technology, which is squarely where we are when we're talking about Facebook. When Facebook came on the scene, and we had social networks before Facebook, and I thought that was a good point in the book. You know, we had MySpace preceded Facebook by quite a distance. Mm-hmm. Facebook was still just kind of relegated to, you know, the educational space. It came out of Harvard. It was then just restricted to college students or university students. And then ultimately it was opened up to everybody, and then it kind of took off. But by no means was it the first on the scene, but obviously it's the one that that caught everybody's attention. And I think the reasons that he mentions in the book, these home-like qualities of Facebook, really are what took it past, let's say, a MySpace or Friendster or those kinds of applications. And it was kind of in the right place at the right time. I think the computer industry and the internet was just waiting for something to provide this kind of homey atmosphere where people could jump in and put their stuff and feel comfortable.
Yep, Zuckerberg's vision for Facebook was that your Facebook ID quite simply will be your gateway to the digital world. And, you know, over time he has increased Facebook to cover our world and span different ages, different languages, and everybody can get it in their mm-hmm. different media platforms. So you can go mobile with it or whatever. So I think he's come a long way towards achieving that vision.
Yep. So let's go over the four home-like qualities that Jesse talks about in Chapter 2 here. And I think all of them are, you know, these aren't going to knock your socks off, but when you think about it, they make sense. They're logical. So the first one is he uses the example and makes a statement that home is where we keep all the stuff that matters most to us.
And I think you can read the book and see stats about how many millions of photos and now videos are being uploaded to Facebook. Mm-hmm. And he talks about when people are in a fire or whatever, they want to grab their photos to get out of their house.
Right.
So, you know, photos alone make Facebook just a huge sharing platform. And, you know, I don't know if you get on Facebook often, Martin, but I do enjoy seeing other people's photos on Facebook for sure.
I'm not a huge user, although I like to keep up. And I do contribute once in a while, but what I enjoy most is keeping up to date, especially on my kids. Mm-hmm. I know my daughter posts a ton of photos, my youngest daughter especially, posts a ton of photos on Facebook. I think she probably has 1,000 photos up there. And it's neat to see her live her life, even though she's kind of away at school. And I get a sense for how she's doing, and I get to enjoy her life as well in the process. So that's a really cool thing. So for her, and you know, for anybody who really uses Facebook, they recognize that if it matters, you're going to put it there. And that's, I think, his first point.
Mm-hmm. Next up, he says, home is wherever we find family. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we don't have to be in a specific location with Facebook. We can find our family from all over the world, family and friends, right there in that one spot, even online at the same time and able to chat with me potentially.
Right.
I don't know about you, but I do have friends from around the world that I enjoy staying in contact with and seeing pictures of their adventures overseas or whatever it is. We have somebody who's serving in the military military in Kuwait right now. Mm-hmm. And I wished him a happy birthday yesterday, and he wrote back to me, you know. So definitely a place to connect with family and friends.
And our Wells Tech family would recognize that, too. They're spread across the entire country and the world, and I'm connected with a number of them on Facebook, so I get to stay connected with them that way. Plus, I grew up on the West Coast, and a lot of the friends that I made in high school and so forth are there, and that's really the only way that mm-hmm. I stay connected with them. So absolutely, home is where you find family, and that's one of the reasons that there is the growth curve, so to speak, on Facebook is so steep, is that you're getting family members that maybe wouldn't normally be very active in social networks, let's say grandma and grandpa, mm-hmm. Getting on Facebook because that's where the grandkids are.
Yep, that's where my mom is, yep. 81 years old and going strong on Facebook.
Right,
so.
Right.
Yep. Home is where we feel safe because we can control the environment.
Yep.
And this kind of speaks to the fact that you do have controls over privacy mm-hmm. With your Facebook settings. Maybe not everybody understands those
right.
controls
real
well.
I was going to say, this is a good news, bad news
Yeah, but if you spend the time, you certainly
you can.
Control who can see what you're posting on your Facebook page.
You can definitely fine-tune it. There are plenty of controls there. You've got to obviously think through them and what these mean. And yeah, that's part of the problem, too, when the youngest generation gets on, they're just so interested in getting their stuff out there that they're not thinking, you know, public versus private versus, you know, who's seeing this. And so you have to be careful there. But the point is valid. Home is safe because you can control the environment, and certainly you can control the environment with Facebook.
Mm-hmm. And then the fourth point that Jesse makes is home is where we can just be ourselves. And I love that one of the quotes he had was, Facebook is a web platform that dishes out our form of unconditional positive regard. Mm-hmm. Makes us feel really good to be who we are because we're connected to all these people. And I'm guessing almost everyone in our listening audience has experienced a Facebook birthday by now.
Oh, yeah.
Where you get greeted by literally potentially hundreds mm-hmm. of people wishing you a happy birthday. It's quite different than the birthdays I experienced maybe 10 years ago.
That's for sure. And some would argue that this is kind of the narcissistic side of Facebook, but I think there's a balance there. You want to, you know, when you're making friends and developing relationships, part of it is sharing stuff about yourself. It's a very cardboardy experience if you don't do that, if you're just kind of a lurker and you see what's going on. You have to contribute to these relationships, and then it gets more fun. So mm-hmm. I think
so. Why Facebook? Why all this popularity? I guess he started this section with a look at the term environmental psychology, which is basically the effect our environment has on our mood or mm-hmm. whatever. And the environment of Facebook tends to make us feel confident and, you know, happy with ourselves and happy with those we're connected with and able to easily communicate. And all of those psychological and technical things combined into an environment that's really had a big impact on our lives.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes next and also where the book goes next. I think next time we talk about it, the chapter is entitled Dispensation, New and Unpredictable Outcomes. Again, this concept of change and how Facebook has maybe changed the way we at least relate to each other, certainly online, but maybe even offline. So tune in next time, next month, for our continuing discussion of the Church of Facebook. But before we leave the topic, we definitely need to play our interview that we conducted with Jesse Rice, the author of the Church of Facebook. He is out in Seattle, Washington, as a youth minister out there. And so let's listen to his thoughts on his book, The Church of Facebook. We'd like to welcome to the show today author, speaker, and musician, Jesse Rice. Good morning, Jesse.
Good morning, Martin.
Very much appreciate you taking some time to join the podcast today and allowing us to talk to you a little bit, especially about your book, The Church of Facebook, which we're currently reviewing on the podcast. And we were just really excited for you to accept our invitation to chat with us. But maybe before we jump into the book and some of the details about that, tell us a little bit about Jesse Rice. Who is he? Where does he work? What does he enjoy doing? And maybe a little bit about what led up to the writing of The Church of Facebook.
Good. Well, yeah, thank you so much for having me. I feel like what you're doing with this podcast is right in alignment with what I'm interested in, so it's cool. A privilege to be part of it. Cool. So I spent about 9 years in Silicon Valley working on staff at a church there as a worship arts director, and it was during that time working with many of our college students and young adults, seeing them enjoy the beginning of Facebook and how that hyperconnection changed things, that it really sparked my interest in that kind of stuff. So while that was going on, I was also newly married. My wife, Katie, and I started a grad school program in counseling psychology. So that sort of complemented the same thing. How does the way that we communicate affect our relationships? And then over the course of some time, some different moves, we're now finding ourselves up near Seattle, Washington, and work on staff at a church doing youth ministry, which I really enjoy. And just had our first baby boy. His name is Ryder. He's 7 weeks old.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. He's, of course, eating right now because that's what he does.
Okay.
But kind of through these different steps over the last 5 or 6 years, that just more and more there was this integration of people exploring faith, people understanding what it means to follow Jesus, all in this context of hyperconnection and hyper-distraction. And I think those things coalesced together at the same time. I was really interested in writing and publishing.
Sure.
And so just kind of, you know, it's a wave that many of us have been riding as far as how technology is growing so quick.
Yep.
We're all wrestling to understand it. So I was one of those who tried to catch that wave and understand for myself and on behalf of others, how is this affecting us in good ways and not so good ways.
So I have to ask you before we jump into some of the deeper questions with, you know, Ryder now on board.
Yeah.
That to me, as my children grow, that somewhat dictates how I use Facebook, either communicating with them or about them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's clear when you look at somebody's Facebook wall and their posts, you know, what's important to their lives. And I'm assuming if we looked at yours, then that he would be a part of that.
Absolutely, yeah. You'd see pictures everywhere.
That's like right.
The old days where we'd flip out the plastic folders with all the pictures. This is now we've got Facebook.
Exactly.
And in fact, just friended someone specifically so that they could see pictures of Ryder. But yeah, it's such an interesting thing in how we share our lives that way and share what's important to us.
Have you looked at the whole timeline feature yet in Facebook? I mean, that seems.
You know, I haven't used it much, partly because I'm afraid to see what I find.
Right.
Exactly. See how naive I was in my early days. But I do love that as a way of kind of collecting our story of how we came together on Facebook. But it certainly is interesting in working with junior high and high school students to see that their whole world really is revolving around this. And they refuse to respond to emails. It's only text message or Facebook message. And so it's been a very interesting journey for me to learn how to do that.
Yeah. So what caused you to write the book, The Church of Facebook? Maybe a little bit behind the name and the content of it.
Yeah. So seeing as I was experiencing doing college and young adult ministry in Silicon Valley, and many of those folks were part of sort of some of the tech boom and some of the developing of stuff. I had a good friend who would have been number 12 in Google had he chosen in, but he didn't. Mm. A few hundred million dollars later, he doesn't have that. But it was just an interesting season to be there, to watch this happening, to get to know people, and then to become more and more interested in how we relate to one another. So I think it was the combination of those things. At the same time, I've always been interested in writing, and it was a dream to be published. And so what could that look like? And I pitched 4 ideas to a publisher. The one they liked most was the one I was least interested in, and that was called The Church of Facebook. So they jumped on that, and I was glad that they did. now in hindsight because it's a timely thing, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it brings together my passion of how do we relate to each other? How do we live life well? And how can we do that together, help each other?
Awesome.
And the book's been out about 2 years now, I believe. What kind of feedback have you gotten?
Yeah, you were absolutely right. Well, it very positive feedback, much to my surprise. I think at the same time I was writing this book, I was learning how to write a book and learning how to be concise. And I think first-time authors especially, they want to be clever, you know, what's my voice? And those aren't bad things, but in the end, people want to read something that means something to them. So I think a lot of the process was me learning to communicate the stuff that was going on and the stuff that I was learning about. So, and the Church of Facebook was a catchy title, kind of a little bit provocative, but really the book is about community. How do we do life together well in an environment that's so disembodied, so hyper-connected? And that's really where things came together.
I have to tell you a little story about my first introduction to your book. I was asked to do a presentation to a pastor's conference out in Minnesota and on social networks. And I'm one of the first ones to say, you know, Facebook confounds me, so I'm always looking mm-hmm. for information to clarify it for me, its use and how to maintain, you know, safety and security and still mm-hmm. have it as a useful ministry tool. So I came across your book. This was, I don't know if it was even published. The mm-hmm. only place I found it was kind of in audio format. So I mm-hmm. bought it in audio format. I downloaded it to my my iPhone probably at the time, and I'm playing it on the road, you know, over to this pastor's conference, which I was supposed to give the next day. And you should have seen the dangerous driving that was going on in the process, because there was just one idea after another where I thought, well, I really got to include that. You know, I got to mm-hmm. remember to look up the Hutterites, and I got to remember to you know, explore this Bible passage or whatever. Just great source material as I was trying to figure out what's a friend on Facebook, because that's one of the big questions. Who do you friend, and you know, how big is your social network, and what's it good for? And that's something that your book really helped me to kind of clarify in my own mind, you know, what is a friend? Maybe talk a little bit about how you kind of thought through that yourself.
Well, thank you for saying that. I'm encouraged to hear that connected. I think a lot of it comes from my own struggle to understand what is a friend. I'm a friendly person, and I'm connected to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't really say anything about depth of friendship,
right,
or how do you be a friend, or how do you receive friendship. And but I have a lot of interest in that. So even though I'm not very good at it, I feel like I really have a passion for it and want to learn for myself first and foremost, because it's such a deep struggle for me. But then as I encounter more and more folks out there who just, the reality is they live in a very lonely world,
mm-hmm.
whether they're aware of it or not. We all really struggle with loneliness, especially the older we get, and it's not so easy like it is in college to just meet people and that kind
of
thing.
Right.
One of the great things about Facebook is that it is, you know, it's kind of bringing a bunch of lonely people together and giving us points of connection, which it's not the same thing as face-to-face, deep, best friendship with lots of shared history, yet it is a point of connection, and human beings need that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is interesting to see how life is springing up there in that kind of unexpected place.
So you take this concept of friending on Facebook, and then you take it and apply it to the community, a church community and membership in a church. And tell us how that translates, or why you think Facebook is a valuable tool in that relationship of church membership.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So I feel like that's kind of the one that comes up most for me. And it's interesting because we're more lonely than ever. But we have more connections than ever, and kind of one is reinforcing the other, I think. And so how it applies, I think, to our faith communities is that there's just so much distraction. We all have so much distraction because we're so connected that it's very hard to build the level of depth of friendship and trust that it really takes to form someone more and more into the likeness of Jesus. So it's We've got great connections. We've got more religious resources than ever. We've got books like mine. We've got podcasts like yours, access to great information. And yet we have all this information, but still we're struggling to be close with one another, to share ourselves and receive from each other in such a way that it would shape us more and more into Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the way it applies is that it's a catalyst for how we can connect. I've seen people begin relationships there and kind of follow up with one another as they see updates and kind of share encouraging words, which has been awesome. I think it's also a symptom of the fact that we don't know how to connect. And so we'd rather do it online. We'd rather share deeply personal things in a disembodied state than take the risk of being in person. So it's a little bit of both. It's a catalyst. It's a symptom. And yet I think it's a space where God is really at work. And if we kind of tune in, we'll see good ways that he's at work there and be able to love one another, even in sort of a disembodied way.
Mm-hmm. A lot of churches, I think, struggle with how to use social networks and Facebook in particular. As you were writing the book, and maybe as you've talked with other churches and maybe looked at your own, what are some of the common mistakes that a church might make in trying to leverage social networks like Facebook or those kinds of things?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that probably one of the biggest mistakes, and I've done this myself many times, is to use it just as a broadcast tool. Mm-hmm. So I've got this idea. It's almost like this disembodied evangelism where I'm just going to throw out a Bible verse, or I'm just going to throw out some sort of pithy comment about what I believe. And it's not that those things are bad, but we have this God who came to us in the flesh, incarnate. And the question we have to ask ourselves as followers of Jesus is, how do we incarnate Jesus in a disembodied realm like that? And I think the way we do that is, first of all, we've got to listen to one another, listening for what's behind those updates. I think we've got to use very clear channels of communication, so it's not just we're posting on each other's walls, blabbing at each other, but we're really taking time to listen. So where I've seen it go wrong is when people are just broadcasting. They're just kind of vomiting into cyberspace. Where I've seen it go right is where people really share something that's meaningful to them and why, and make it much more personalized. So it's not something I'm selling, but it's something which is truly witness. I have experienced this. I can't help but talk about it.
Right.
I think what we have is a lot of people who haven't actually experienced the reality of the love of God, but feel like they should tell people about that. That's often the message that we get. And so we're almost giving away these things we don't possess. So I'd say the more kind of sharing the reality of our own experience as we're walking in faith, that's the stuff that really connects with people.
Right. I guess as I look at churches in general, they have a great model of a social network built right in. These are people gathered around a common cause. God has called them to encourage one another, to assist each other, to support one another. And I think that's what truly makes a social network in a virtual way successful, where you have those same kinds of feelings, those same kinds of actions going on in cyberspace.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. And that's why I think that really the church has a unique opportunity in history to lead the charge when it comes to living well in this hyper-connected culture. We're often a step behind, but here we have a chance. Because ideally, yes, the body of Christ is the ideal social network. Obviously, we're incredibly flawed. We don't get it much better than anybody else. But we have this God who wants to work in these messy relationships to bring change, bring good things to the world. And so I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, we certainly have the motivation to do that.
Yeah. Jesse, I was reading one of your recent blog posts, and you talked about being a prophet. I'm wondering if you can look into the future a little bit for us on the Wells Tech podcast. Tell us, are any more books in your future?
Yes. Yeah, I'm excited to write more, even more directed toward the idea of how do we live well in this hyper-distracted culture. And so kind of turning my attention that way, and the more that we're using our mobile devices, the more that we're linked to all these social networks, then how do we focus? Because there's no way to become more and more like Jesus if we're not focusing our attention. So that's kind of where the writing is headed, and I just think that especially the world will continue to get more and more mobile. Our whole worlds will continue to get into the palm of our hands, as they already are so much. And as that happens, we're going to have to really learn new ways of being together. Because very often, maybe you've had that experience too, where you're talking with somebody, perhaps even sharing something deep, and they pull out their phone and check a text message. Or it's like, these are things, some basic practices we're going to have to learn to do again in order to learn how to be together well.
Yeah, keeping on the prophetic theme here, as we ask you maybe to look into the future, do you see more and more churches getting this, you know, understanding the role that a social network could play in their ministry, or are they just kind of being dragged along?
I've experienced a little bit of both. I'd say the majority of us are trying to figure it out and feel out of balance, feel several steps behind. And I think that's just the nature of how quickly things are changing.
Oh, sure.
Even the experts feel a few steps behind. And so what I think one of the great ways we can use this is a means of conversation, going to those experts often who are younger than us and saying, what is your experience of this, and how are you doing it, and how could we use this to help meet you where you're at and meet your needs? So I think, again, that kind of posture of listening is such a great way to enter into that. But it's certainly, I think we're all feeling the tension of, boy, this has a lot of impact on our lives, but I'm not quite sure what to do with it.
Right. And you're in the perfect situation there, dealing with youth where this is where they want to be and where a lot of them live, you know, essentially. And to see that their church is willing to connect with them on that level, that's got to say something.
I think so, yeah. If we can honor the fact that they are so connected and not just say, oh, that's dumb, you shouldn't do that, turn it off.
Right.
Not that turning it off is bad, but just that we want to first come at it, why are you so engaged in this way, and and what does this mean to you?
Yep. Jesse, thanks so much for your time, and blessings on your work there in Seattle, and in any other future writing endeavors that may be in your future. We really appreciate you sharing your experiences.
Well, thank you, Martin. Thank you, Sally.
Thank you so much, Jesse, for taking the time out of your schedule. It's always nice. We do a lot of these book reviews, and we aren't always able to get the authors on, but for at least a couple of our books, we've been able to do that, and that's really just a pleasure.
It is. And Martin, you actually came across an article from Church Mag that ties right into our interview with Jesse and looking at Facebook for congregations. And the title was, surprisingly, Why Facebook Should Not Be Your Youth Ministry Website.
Right. I thought that was kind of ironic, and I thought it would probably be nice to bring this up because some maybe look at Facebook as the be-all, end-all for connecting with your youth, because that's where they are. And this article brings up some interesting points about why that may not necessarily be true. Even though all your teens are already on Facebook, there are some reasons that maybe you wouldn't want to do that. First of all, you can alienate, easy for me to say, alienate any non-Facebook users. Believe it or not, there probably are some out there. So you are essentially excluding them. And there's a bunch of other examples of maybe why you should think twice about kind of putting all of your eggs in the Facebook basket. It's not saying don't, but it's saying it shouldn't be the exclusive way that you're going to reach out and minister to your youth.
It certainly is an easy and free way to have a page and have a presence on the web, but perhaps with balance, perhaps with other options as well.
Yep, absolutely. Just as with anything. So let's move on to our picks of the week.
And mine has got an education focus this week. I found a new page off of the dictionary.com page. I don't know if you use dictionary.com, but
occasionally, yes.
We play a lot of word games at our house, so we're constantly fact-checking each other with our dictionaries. But I was on dictionary.com the other day, and they have a new page called Word Dynamo. It's at dynamo.dictionary.com. And it's basically fun word quizzes, and they have them at all different levels, so you can pick them by grade level, so elementary school versus middle school versus high school. You can get word quizzes based on standardized testing like the ACT or SAT, or you can zero in on word lists related to particular academic subjects like religion and philosophy, science and technology, social science and history, that kind of thing. And then finally, they have word quizzes for different languages, French, Latin, and Spanish. And the thing is, for each of these different areas, you can play games around these word lists. They have matching games. They have crossword type puzzles. You can listen to the word and select its definition. You can type out the word that matches the definition, or you can do kind of a flashcard drill with the word list. And I think it would be a really engaging way for students. And you can even create your own word list. So maybe if it's your spelling words or vocabulary words of the week, this might be a way for teachers to let them play games as they learn the particular words that they need to study. So check it out. Again, it's at dynamo.dictionary.com. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Awesome.
Yeah, Sally, it was a lot of fun,
actually.
Where do
you come up with these? You just surfing the internet and coming across these, or these are coming through other blogs that you read?
I think this one I just kind of found on the dictionary.com page because I'm there a lot checking myself. So,
Now, this is great. These are great resources. Some of these hidden nuggets can be, you know, really game changers in certain subject areas, like this one maybe could be. So,
Definitely.
My pick of the week is actually a Facebook competitor. I thought this would be maybe a good week to talk about Google Plus. I don't know if it's out of beta yet or not, or I think anybody can join at this point, so I guess that means it's out of beta. But Google Plus, if you haven't heard, is Google's version of Facebook. It works somewhat differently, but the same concept, where you are connecting with people that you know who are also on Google Plus. You need a Google account. And it has some similar characteristics. You have what's called a stream. That's like your wall on Facebook. But your stream is kind of the stream of different things that people are posting or sharing or whatever. It has a photo library. And the thing that I like best, and maybe I like better than Facebook, is the concept of circles, which is equivalent to Facebook's lists, but it's far more prominent and I think more intuitive and easier to use than Facebook lists. I've really never got the hang of that, but Google Plus's circles allow you to create different categories or circles of different acquaintances. So you have friends, maybe you have acquaintances, coworkers. I have a circle, as we've mentioned in the past, called Wells Tech. So I put all of the people that I interact with related to the podcast in that group. So if I want to share something to my Wells Tech listeners, I'll just share it just with those people, so I won't have to bother my family members with maybe stuff that they're not interested. And that's kind of how I view Facebook, as it's a kind of a fire hose approach where you see everything from everybody. And it doesn't have to be that way, but it's very difficult to filter that out. On Google Plus, you have the ability to say, just show me the post from this circle of friends or this circle of coworkers or whatever. So you can really kind of get a little bit more granular with your social networking. As I mentioned, you do need a Google Plus account. It's got a nice photo section. One reason that I wanted to bring this up today is that yesterday Google Plus just opened the ability for organizations or groups to have their own Google Plus pages, profile pages. So last night I created one for Wells Tech. So if you get onto Google Plus, and you can do that at plus.google.com, get your own Google Plus account, and then if you do a search, there's a search box at the top of every page, as you might expect in a Google product. Just type in Plus Wells Tech, and you'll find our page, and just add that to one of your circles, and then you can follow us, similar to the way you do on Facebook. So we'll post articles there, we'll post the interviews, we'll post the show, you know, the information for the show notes, those kinds of things. Just another way to stay connected. Another thing that I really like about this concept, and Facebook you can kind of do this too, is that you can have ongoing discussions and then embed media, and you kind of have a threaded discussion. You can even send private messages, those kinds of things. So it's got some things going for it that I really like. And we'll have to figure out, Sally, how we maybe use this in the future, but there are some things that it can do that Facebook cannot. One of them is something called Hangouts, where you can bring together up to 9 people in a video conference, and it seems to work extremely well. So we'll have to get the curlers out of your hair and you onto Hangouts.
I'm thinking not. Okay. We'll see. We'll see if I turn on my video camera for Google Plus. But I definitely think I'm going to put you in charge of figuring it out, because I heard you say this was intuitive, and I get Facebook a lot better than I get Google Plus.
Well, maybe that makes us a good team. I'll take Google Plus. You brain, do take Facebook. Yes.
But yeah, I joined the Wells Tech page. I don't really know what that means, but I'm there.
But you're going to find out.
We'll start posting there. That'll be fun.
Awesome. Okay. All right, let's move on to our of interest section. And you mentioned it, or we mentioned it at the top of the show. We have the Wells National High School Choral Fest at Martin Luther College this coming weekend. And it's on what's called MLC TV. It's their, basically their live stream feed. And there is a Pops concert, which is really cool and fun. They sing all kinds of show tunes and dances, choreographed presentations, and entertainment is of high quality there. That's this Friday, November 11th at 7 o'clock it starts. And do we have the address for that? It's livestream.com. I think you can go to the regular MLC page as well.
Right.
Just go to MLC-Wells. .edu, and
there's a link in the top bar that says MLC TV, okay, right on any page of the MLC website.
Yep. So tune in for that. And then there's a sacred concert that'll also be streamed on November 13th. That's Sunday at 2 o'clock. All those times are central time, so tune in to some good stuff coming up this weekend.
Looking forward to it.
Yep.
All right, we have some links to share from community feedback this week. First up, Jason Schmidt shared the 2008-2009 Wikipedia selection for schools. And if you aren't familiar with this, what they've done is basically made Wikipedia static. So they've taken a selection of pages. It actually is 5,500 articles, 34,000 images, and 20 million words. It would fill a 20-volume encyclopedia. So they've taken that, and they've locked it, basically. So
the pages, snapshot, yeah.
Right, exactly. The pages can no longer be edited, but they have a version of Wikipedia which might be more appropriate to link to for schools. First of all, the articles are more concentrated on educational type focus, as opposed to just anything in the world that might be a part of Wikipedia. And then the fact that they can no longer be edited, so it wouldn't be that someone could come in and do something to the page at the moment that you're looking at it and seeing some inaccurate facts or something. So a very good link to include for school research and that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Martin, you tagged an article from ESPN, something about Tim Tebow?
Yeah, it was actually on Mashable, but it was related to an ESPN Tim Tebow article. If those of you that aren't familiar with Tim Tebow, he was a University of Florida quarterback, well-known for his the outspoken way in which he shares his faith. Obviously, he's high-profile. Was a high-profile college football player that shared his faith, which was great. And now he's in the pros doing the same thing. But the article that I read, the thing that interests me, it references back to the 2009 BCS championship game, which is the college football championship when he was still at Florida, where it says he painted John 3:16 on his eye paint. You know, they have that black blackout under the eyes to prevent glare, and he painted John 3:16. And the article says, as a result, 92 million people searched for the passage on Google during or shortly after the game, which kind of shocked me, and maybe it shouldn't, but what the part that shocked me was, were there 92 million people who didn't know what John 3:16 was, that they had to go to Google and figure out what it was? I mean, that you see John 3:16 signs, or you used to, all, you know, at every football game you'd ever watch, that somebody would have to search on this. And maybe I'm not saying that that's necessarily a that I'm disappointed that they did that, because hopefully they were able to find what John 3:16 was and read it, and God's Holy Spirit had a chance to work on some hearts there. But it just kind of took me back a little bit that that many people didn't know what John 3:16 meant.
Yeah, and the power of the media right there at work. So
yep,
very interesting. Okay, next up, Ryan Rosenthal shared a link, and this is to a timeline generation software, or Web 2.0 tool, I should say. Mm-hmm. It's called xtimeline.com, and he recommended it if you're doing some history work where you need to create timelines in the classroom. Perhaps this free resource would be a value to you. We've been doing a lot of history reading around our household lately, and it's interesting to look at it in timeline format and see things that were happening all over the world, maybe in ancient history, at the same time. Pretty cool tool for putting all that together.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And then finally, another link via Digo from Jason Schmidt, and it is to Grade Level Skills Help at Internet for Classrooms. And I did look at this page, but now I'm waiting for it to come up on my computer. But Jason commented and said that it's free resources for education divided by grade, subject area, and national standards. And the page is up, and I see it goes from first through eighth grade, what they have available there, and all the different skill sets around that. So you can get language arts activities, math activities, science, and social studies. At all these different levels, even ACT and SAT test prep resources are included for some of the older grade levels.
Yeah. So what I like about this site, I was just reviewing it a little bit earlier, is that they do a nice job of breaking this down by subject matter expert, subject matter category, and then even subcategories of that. So, for instance, in a language arts section under kindergarten, so they got it by kindergarten, then language arts, and then skill builders. So there's things like beginning letter recognition and beginning phonics and colors and letter matching. And then there's a reading section, and then there's usually a general resources section. That's half the battle, is trying to navigate into the stuff that you're actually looking for, rather than just this big melting pot of all kinds of resources where you have to spend just as much time trying to sift through everything to find it as you would maybe even doing, you know, building it yourself. Here, it's pretty easy to see what's in what category. So they've done a nice job at organizing this stuff. Must have been done by a teacher.
Yeah, somebody with a good vision. Right. I'm looking at a math activity, and it's Java-based and interactive with the students. They take a quiz kind of thing, and it tells them if they're right or wrong, and if they miss it, they can try again. So looks like a really good way to engage the students online. Mm-hmm.
Who shared that with us?
That's from Jason.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, Jason.
Yep. Next up, we heard from Alicia Cameron. She had a fun link to share with us, Martin.
Mm-hmm. That's my daughter, in case you're wondering. and she shared with us the Hallelujah Chorus mashup. And I've seen one of these before with, what did they call that? The
Silent Monks.
Silent Monks, right, where they set to music and then they hold up flashcards, basically, with the lyrics of the Hallelujah Chorus. This one that Alicia shared was some elementary school kids up in, and I'm not going to even try to say the name of this town. Maybe I'll try it. Quinhagak. I'm sure some Alaskans will tell me that I'm wrong, but it's a town up in Alaska, and it's very clear when you look at the video that they're in Alaska. This is a YouTube video of them essentially doing the same thing in all kinds of different ways. And it's you can tell it's kind of a homemade video, but it's, you know, Alicia's point was that this might be a cool way to introduce kids to media and also to the beautiful lyrics that are the Hallelujah Chorus. So thanks, Alicia.
Yep, fun way to do video editing in the classroom, and I know the kids would enjoy that.
Absolutely.
That's a great idea, Alicia.
Yep.
And then finally, we had an email from our friend David Schumann, who's at Peace in Janesville, Wisconsin. And I really enjoyed that David took the time to write us, because his congregation decided that as a cost-cutting measure that they would take their newsletter online, that they'd turn it into an electronic format, and they used one of our favorite recommendations, Martin. They used MailChimp. Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about MailChimp in a while, but it is a free resource that, unless you're really super large, you can make use of for free at least. And you can send out really professional electronic newsletters. And apparently it was a good experience for the folks at Peace in Janesville. David especially appreciated how easy it was to set up his list of email addresses. And this is a question I get sometimes. How do you get started? How do you come up with, you know, get all those email addresses into the system? And MailChimp makes it super easy. You can actually, if you have church management software like Shepherd Staff, you can just export a list to an Excel format and upload a spreadsheet of names and email addresses. Mm-hmm. And just like that, your list is set up. Also in the setup process, MailChimp gives you a form that you can embed on your website so more people can sign up for your e-news.
Right.
So they do make it really easy. He even set up a Facebook page in the process, he says, and so they can get updates there and share with people in their congregation that way. So congrats and kudos to the folks at Peace in Janesville, Wisconsin, and hopefully that's going to be a great and cost-effective solution for you.
Very good. Yep, we're big fans of MailChimp around here, so good stuff. That's it for community feedback, Sally.
Yep, I think that'll do it for this week.
So if you'd like to contribute, there are many ways to do so. WellsTech@wells.net is our email address. WellsTech.wells.net is a show notes page. We're on Facebook, of course. DIGO, we love the DIGO links because those are historical record, and we can always go back and look at those. You can do #WellsTech on Twitter. I just mentioned that we now have a Google Plus page, so just search for Plus Wells Tech, and you can join that page, and we'll keep you updated that way. There's no excuse for not being able to share with us your thoughts, questions, ideas with us, and we'll get that stuff on the show. Please do.
Sounds like we need a new social media icon on our
Wells Tech page. There's a Google Plus icon out there we can throw up there. I'm sure Julie Duran will really appreciate that.
Yeah.
One more icon, yes. we got about a dozen up there now, I think. We are connected.
We are.
Hyper-connected, yes. Next week, speaking of the show notes page, we thought it would be a worthwhile show to do a walkthrough for everybody. Sally, I'm sure you agree with me. I believe that what we've kind of created over 209 episodes, one of the most valuable things in addition to the community that's been built is the show notes page and the Wells Tech Wiki page, where we have documented essentially everything we've done on the show, every pick we've made, every suggestion that has been made by our listening audience, just a tremendous resource. So but it can get a little bit overwhelming if you're not quite sure where to look and how to look. So next week we'll be talking about the Wells Tech Wiki and the show notes page, and just letting everybody know that there's good stuff there and how to find that stuff. So tune in next week for that.
Very good.
Let's close the show with the music of Koine, and in fitting Reformation style, we just finished up the Reformation weekend last weekend. We are going to play, of course, God's Word is Our Great Heritage. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
God's Word is our great heritage and shall be ours forever to spread it. Light from age to age shall be our chief endeavor. Through life it guides our way, in death it is our stay. Lord, grant while worlds endure, we keep its teachings pure throughout all.